Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Time of day, it's Michael Savage, the man so many love and so many don't. Now, I have three major news stories. Another judge has ruled that Bernie Madoff, the disgraced money manager, has the ability to remain free on bail in his $7 million penthouse. I guess the tentacles of the money manager have touched virtually every judge in the city. Topic two, Obama will end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And the military will become a machine run by Do Ask, Do Tell. And who told you this would be one of Obama's first moves? Me, Michael Savage, months ago. Bin Laden is back, ho-hum, urging war in Israel, ho-hum. Now, I'll get to some of these and other news stories on the Savage Nation today. But first, I have to tell you, you're going to get a peek, a rare peek, into my subconscious hard drive. I do something that no other host in radio has ever done, so far as I know, and it's irregular. It is irregular, I admit, and that is I share some of my dreams with my audience. Why I do so is anyone's guess, but I do so. The dream you're about to hear is both personal and political, which is why I've chosen to share it with you. I told this dream to my staff this morning, and they said, Mike, you have to record it now while it's fresh, because come later today, you're not going to remember the details. It is about Michael Savage meeting Obama in the next world. Listen, I got to tell you something. I'm not going to change anything to make you think better or worse of me because I don't control my subconscious. But apparently, well, okay, in the dream I met Obama. Now, what triggered this dream was no doubt the fact that the chameleon conservatives went to the White House, went to dinner with Obama. The chameleon conservatives such as Bill Kristol, the fake Charles Krauthammer, the Nancy, the Pat, the Noonans, the ones who don't believe in borders, language, or culture. They are doctrinaire Republican, country club Republicans. So I suppose a part of me would like to have met Obama and have expressed, you know, my views of the nation and where it should go, even knowing he wouldn't follow my ideas. But I doubt that he'll be reaching out. Anyway, here's how the dream began. And remember, I don't control my dreams. My dreams don't control me, but they occur. It came to me that someone came and said, did you see on the Drudge Report that you were invited to meet Obama? I said, no, when did it appear? They said 10 minutes ago. And it was a long list of names, mainly people in talk radio, and Savage was there. So it was a lengthy discussion as to whether I would go, should I go, do I want to go? And I was going to ask my audience, should I go and see Obama? Then it became a logistic question of, can I get there during the inauguration? If that was mixed in with it, isn't it going to be too crowded to get there, et cetera, and so on. And I was saying, well, maybe they can arrange a helicopter from Virginia to fly me in because there's no way to drive in during the inauguration. The next scene in the dream, I guess that was resolved somehow, is that it's inside of a somewhat almost a community center or a school room, a school auditorium on a flat floor, not with an amphitheater-style seating. And Obama's up at the dais, but he's not there yet. It's just filled with cameras and lights. And I'm in the back trying to listen to the introductory speeches and him speaking shortly. And I can't hear him well. The sound system is bad. So I go around the side. And in order to get over to the left side of the front, I have to crawl in front of the cameras, as you see done all the time at congressional hearings. So I crawl along the front of the room, and I wind up in the corner, the left corner, actually would be the right corner of the stage, listening to the speeches. And then Obama comes over to me, and I look up, and I'm on my hands and knees from having crawled over, and my head is at the level of his shoe. And I notice his shoes are the same as my shoes. And he reaches down and he says to me, "Hello, Michael Savage." And I say to him, "Hello, Mr. President. I hope you know that I was once a social worker." And he says, "Well, why don't you get up and shake my hand?" And I said, "I can't. My legs don't work." Whereupon he reaches down and I feel his strength and he lifts me up. And that was the end of the dream. Now, what's interesting about this dream is there's so many things interesting about the dream that I'm going to let you, the audience, be the interpreter of my subconscious. This is Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. But wait, there's more. There was one more scene, and perhaps the most telling for those dream analysts amongst you. Just after this scene of Obama reaching down to pick up yours truly, my deceased mother appeared in my dream. As true as I am standing here, she felt as though she were alive and standing next to me. She came to me in a dream, in other words. And I looked at her and I said, "Mom, I've written a poem. Would you like to hear it?" Now, she was not one given to literature. She said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, here it is. I hope you like it. That which we fear the most is our best friend. That which we love the most is our worst enemy. Fear nothing. All is eternal." My mother thought for a moment and smiled. She said, "I really like that poem, Michael."
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Look, I understand that you consider this indulgent in a way, but that's the nature of, you know, the show and of myself. I mean, it is a political dream. And when I tell you that I eat, drink, and sleep the Savage Nation radio program, I mean, what is a better example than my dreams themselves? I'm not dreaming of dancing girls. Here I am dreaming of Obama. Now, think about that. This is deeply embedded in my subconscious. It's an interesting discussion for a moment. I mean, I'll go on to the news of the day for sure. I also did watch The Wrestler last night with whatever his name is. I forget, Mickey Rourke. I mean, I got a copy, you know, that they're distributing to the media if you ask for it. You know, I'll talk about that, my review of The Wrestler, if you want. And we'll do the news stories, the Obama don't ask, do tell, or do ask, do tell, Madoff can remain on bail laughing at the world, Bin Laden, blah, 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 the meltdown of our economy, the fact that Citibank got $45 billion and wants more, and they take $20, $40 million bonuses and they don't go to jail. We are living in the most corrupt time in American history. As Senator Jim DeMint said today, he said Congress is ignoring the Constitution and our own laws. Jim DeMint said that Congress has cut the lines to our own Constitution and our own laws, that we're not even listening to the laws that they pass. They're not listening to the laws that they pass. You want to talk about that stuff? I'll do it. Right now, my dreams. Eddie in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Well, when I first believed that it was just what you had said, the first part of the dream, I was thinking, well, it was just the media coverage of them making Obama into a godlike figure that seeped into your subconscious. But then when you said that there was a second part with your mom being involved and with the poem, well, maybe it means that your worst dreams will come true and Obama's going to be this socialist monster that we won't be able to stop.
Well, I have a deep fear that we actually are in the beginning, the infancy stage of a Cuban-style revolution, like Che Guevara, the mass murderer, will be working for Obama. Obama himself is probably a decent person, but watch out because the road to you nowhere is often paved with good intentions. My deepest fears is that we already are on the road to a far-left revolution in America. Now you say, well, how can you say that some of the appointments are conservatives or right, you know, to the right? And the answer is very clear, that a true revolutionary is very smart and takes his time. They are called Fabian socialists. I mean, if he came into power and appointed, you know, Reverend Wright to one position and Louis Farrakhan to another and then pick another radical figure to yet another, the country would rise up and there'd be screams from Maine to Minnesota. But if you fool the enemy, if you fool the opposition, by putting their own kind, in essence, into positions of high power when they have no real power, in a very short period of time, you can lead the country in any direction you want. Now you say, well, how do you know this is happening? I don't know if it's happening, but obviously there's a deep fear in my subconscious that that's where we're going to go, that we're going to a new gulag in this country. I feel we're entering a phase of a Cuban-style gulag in the United States of America. Eddie, thanks for the call. That's why I decided to tell you the dream, you know. Ohio, Bob, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I interpret your dream as you're begging Obama and all black people in this country for forgiveness. That's why you can't, your feet don't work, and you can't get off your knees. And then
why should I beg black people for forgiveness?
Pardon?
Why should I beg black people for forgiveness?
Look at all the terrible things you said about affirmative action, all the terrible things.
Well, you see, the difference between you and me is that I've been affected by affirmative action. My life was ruined for 20 years as a result of affirmative action. So don't tell me that I have anything to apologize for.
Your family came to a country.
Excuse me, Bob. Just excuse me. Maybe you use slaves. No one in my family ever did. Maybe you have guilt because you're living on money that was made through slavery, not my family.
I have no money. I'm Serbian. I have no money from slavery. But
You're Serbian? You're Serbian, yet you make such outrageous statements that my family made money through slavery? Are you insane?
I'm saying your family came to a country that black people enabled to exist, and you've benefited from that.
Are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? My grandfather came here with almost no money and worked 20 hours a day and died at 47 years of age from a heart attack. You're telling me he lived off the labor of black people? Are you nuts?
Let me ask you a question.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Big Serb. Tell me about the Serbian people and your good neighbors, the Croats. Tell me about your people and what they did to the Croatians.
Mike, I'm an American.
You're an American? Oh, so you benefited from the slave labor? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that...
Wait a minute. You're an American, so you're saying you're guilty because blacks were enslaved and you owe them something?
You won't even let me talk because...
Well, why should I let you talk when you're sitting there making wild accusations? What it is you're projecting your guilt. Don't you see it? You feel guilty for having come to a country that you feel owes black people something.
No, I don't owe black people anything, but I...
Oh, you don't, but I do? Why is it that I do and you don't?
I appreciate what the country they helped create for my parents.
Oh, you appreciate it, so therefore you're guilt-free. I see. Boy, that's a good one, Bob. Has your life ever been affected by affirmative action, Bob?
Yes.
Have you ever applied for a job and not gotten it and seen it go to a less qualified black person, Bob? Huh?
Because they had to take so many minorities. But luckily for me...
Oh, so you feel good about that?
I feel is I'm helping a people that helped create a country that I could come to and you could come to and make a lot of money and be...
You know you're crazy. You know you're a crazy man. Your liberal guilt is actually toxic to you and to everyone around you.
Having those kinds
you probably have a total wreckage in your personal life. My guess is that you are so racked with confusion and guilt, and you're never going to disclose this, is that you have a miserable, horrible personal life.
Great personal life.
No, I'm sure your children and you don't get along.
I give, and then, you know, when you give...
You don't give anything. All you do is walk around in a state of confusion. I don't really want to talk about Bob from Ohio. You are wrong, Bob. If a man gets a straight-A average from a great university and then is not given a position he's entitled to, but is given to a person with a D average, you know who suffers from that, Bob? The entire country. That is why the entire country is suffering right now, Bob, because less qualified women and minorities and immigrants have been given jobs that should have gone, in most cases, to white males who are more qualified and had better experience, Bob.
No.
I don't owe anybody anything, Bob. 1-800-449-8255, phone number. MichaelSavage.com. Let's go to Larry. Larry, welcome to the program. Your interpretation, please.
Michael, I studied dream therapy at the Esalen Institute with Fritz Perl.
I love Fritz Perl's writing. Larry, speak a little more directly into the phone. I can hardly hear you.
I've got you on my Bluetooth because I'm driving on the freeway. Get hold of Fritz Perl's book, Gestalt Therapy Verbatim. The theory that Fritz Perl had was that all aspects of dreams are unfinished business in day-to-day life. And what we would do is a person would tell their dream, and they would take responsibility for every aspect of the dream.
No, I understand. Listen, I'm way past that, Larry. I've been interpreting my dreams since I'm about 18 years of age. I taught my children to do it. I studied American Indian dream interpretation. I'm not a newcomer to this. I'm sharing this with my audience because it's highly political. So let me cut to the chase. How do you interpret the dream?
Well, a dream is your business. It's not somebody else's. Somebody cannot interpret your dream.
All right, I hear you. I have an interpretation for the dream. It has nothing to do with guilt. I think it has to do with fear. I think it has to do with as I said earlier, a Soviet-style revolution that's going on in the United States of America that is deeply planned by both parties, not just the Democrat Party. George Bush breaking the economy is all part and parcel of this plan to destroy the freedoms in this country. Make no mistake about it. That's my interpretation.
Of our banking and financial institutions is the purpose of these loans.
I'm sorry, Larry. I would love to hear you, but it's very hard to hear, and I'm very sorry. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Steve in Green Bay, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Three parts. First of all, being on your knees would suggest to me that you feel like you've had your legs cut out from under you with this last election. I know I certainly do. Secondly, is that you're still a person of goodwill, despite what the ogres and detractors might suggest, and that you would like to see some success, and you're hoping that somehow Obama will help the country be successful, which we both doubt.
100% true. I actually see him as a decent person, but it's not him that I fear. It's the very evil people around him who should be feared very deeply by every American listening to this show. He is surrounded by pure evil.
And Congress is pure evil.
Congress is totally criminal.
Savage.
Congress has cut the lines to our constitutional moorings, and we're just drifting around at this point and even ignoring the laws that we write, such as this troubled asset law, $750
billion. Now, that's Senator Jim DeMint, one of the finest senators this country has ever had. In fact, he's a man that stands almost alone. There are a few true conservatives and true patriots. He is amongst the best this country has ever had. Listen to what he just said today. He's criticizing the latest TARP demand by the gangsters of Wall Street. Senator Jim DeMint accused Congress of cutting the lines to our own Constitution and ignoring the laws that they themselves write. That means we have now descended into becoming a banana republic where gangsters, veritable gangsters, are running the country. That's what Senator Jim DeMint is saying. They're criminals. Do you hear what I'm saying? Do you understand the danger we're in? That they're demanding another $350 billion that is not theirs to take? And they're not accounting for where the money went in the first place. The gangsters of Wall Street have sucked the country dry. They should be arrested right now. There should be a mass arrest on Wall Street, including and starting with Chris Cox of the SEC. Take them all in. Now, who's going to do that? You? You're going to do that? There has to be something somewhere. There has to be something somewhere. I have my ideas of what's going to happen, and I'm not going to say it on this program. But something is going to give. Something is going to happen here. There's going to be something at some point that's going to lead to a prairie fire across this country. They're not going to sit here and take it anymore. The gangsters of Wall Street have stolen our future from us. And they're demanding even more of the future from us. They have not given up their huge bonuses. They haven't given up their airplanes. They haven't given up their salaries. Nothing. And they're saying, give us more. Well, why wouldn't they ask for more if they're getting it from George Bush and their good friend Paulson? Why wouldn't they demand more? They're laughing at us. They're laughing in our face. That's, by the way, why Bernie Madoff is still walking around and living in his apartment, spitting sunflower seeds from his terrace onto the people below him. Because he's emblematic of what's going on in the country today. It's not a double standard. It's a whole different realm of standards that you can't even comprehend. We're no longer living in a republic called the United States of America. We're living in some form of aristocracy that was overthrown by the revolutionaries who created the United States of America. But the educational system is so socialistic, most people don't even understand this. Let's go back. That's why I'm talking about my dream. Because I'd rather talk about my dream than about politics per se. There's nothing I can do about it anymore. Nothing. If 10 million of you sent emails to Congress saying don't give any more TARP money, they'd laugh at you. They'd throw the emails in the garbage. They'd laugh at you. You're nothing to them. You mean nothing to them. Nothing. You're less than nothing. Now go back to my dream. San Diego, David, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. How you doing? Hello?
David, you're on the show. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I think to interpret your dream, I think you just want to give him a chance because you love this country. Basically.
Well, of course I want to give him a chance, but what's this thing about me being on the floor at his shoe height?
Well, it's hope that he can pull this country out of what it's in, basically. It doesn't have anything to do with partisanship. It has to do with enforcing laws, regulating laws to prevent some of these bubbles that are occurring. It's getting rid of corporate greed.
Do you actually think even if he intended to do that, the Democrat Party would let him do that?
Well, it's not a question.
Do you actually think the Clintonistas surrounding Obama are going to permit him to reform this country? Do you think they're going to permit him to reform their friends on Wall Street? They are Wall Street.
We have a Justice Department and FBI that their job is to enforce the laws of the country.
Ah, well, that's very interesting. The FBI is the organization that apparently got Bernie Madoff to admit that he's the head of a Ponzi scheme. So perhaps there's hope, but you know how slow the wheels of justice roll in this system, and you know how many years it's going to take to get this man to justice?
Well, that's what needs to change. We need a leader, and your dream has to do with giving him a chance, and at least let's hear him out, and because no matter who the president is, we need some hope in this country.
Well, I understand that. So I'm now caught up in the hope message that the Obama maniacs put out. I have hope, too, in him. Is that what the dream is? Is that I have a deep-seated hope in him? So now let us say that's true for a moment. Now, how do we then jump? Let's please jump to the dream part with Mom. That which we fear is our best friend. That which we love is our worst enemy. Fear nothing. All is eternal. Where did that come from?
Well, I think your mother's sending a message for you that your hope is not unfounded. He can actually get it done. Don't be afraid. You know, we're the socialists.
Oh, wait a minute. I dreamed it, not my mother. I mean, she appeared in my dream, and I gave her the dream that I had. The poem in my dream was for her in the next world. But we were both in the same world. And in that dream, we were both in the same world. Look, maybe this is too much for the average listener. They're not used to this. You know, dream interpretation and talking about your deceased mother and dreams and politics is hard for the average person who fundamentally is used to doctrinaire one- or two-dimensional discussions. I don't know if I should continue this.
Well, no. I'm just saying that, in general, your dream has to do with giving him a chance, and hopefully he can provide the leader.
Look, I look at Obama, and what I see, I believe I see the reality. Obama is a decent man. I can tell you when I see his wife and children, I know he's a good man. I'll tell you that right off the bat. He is a far left politician. He's very green. He's very naive in some ways. He's part of the Chicago Democrat machine, which, as we all know, is extremely corrupt. Now, here is a man who I even said yesterday does not believe he's president. Every time I see him, I see a young professor who looks around and says, "Oh, my God. I cannot believe it. I'm president." In other words, he ran for the office. He debated for the office, but it wasn't real for him. It's now sinking in that he's president. And I believe the guy is intimidated by his own success. He can't believe that his machine made him president. The interesting part here for me is that in his own heart, I think he means well and would like to do well for the country. But as I said in the last segment on this show, he is surrounded by some of the most evil people the world has ever seen. Make no mistake about it, they're not good, kindly, decent, America-loving people. That's what worries me. It worries me deeply that we're liable to have a Cuban-style revolution in America with death camps overseen by mass murderers like Che Guevara, who is glorified by the scum in Hollywood, the filth like Soderbergh, the vermin like whoever played him, who have whitewashed this mass murderer from Cuba so that the youth don't understand the danger they are in. You want me to get into the dream? I'll get into the dream. The brainwashing in this country has been going on so long that the people's minds are free of any reality. They don't even know reality. So they watch reality shows. Most people don't live in reality. They live in a fantasy created by Rupert Murdoch, who owns every aspect of the media, from false news on fixed news to movies to magazines run by Bill Kristol, which pretend to be conservative for the conservatives, liberal magazines for the liberals, you name it. You name it. The octopus is everywhere. And so they live in his fantasy. So they watch his reality shows because they themselves don't even know reality. So they have to watch vermin acting out reality on reality shows, which are not reality. As anybody knows, the minute a camera's in front of you, it's no longer real. I was trained as an anthropologist at one point in my life. And I understood that the minute an anthropologist enters a village to observe the villagers are no longer the villagers that were there, or their behavior, excuse me, is modified by the interloper called the anthropologist. So you're watching a reality show that's fake. So they overact. They scream a lot. Who's going to have a reality show if they're not egomaniac, narcissist, drug addicts? Who would want cameras in their house, in their underwear? But sick, demented people. But the point is different. It's not about the reality shows. It's about the fact that most Americans are so brainwashed and so brain dead that they watch this crap thinking it's reality. Which leads me to the next discussion on the show. If you want to move away from my dreams, maybe it's too self-indulgent. And that is the movie The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke. So after the show last night, left the studio, went home, got takeout Chinese food, didn't get sick, put on the surround sound, big screen TV, flipped in The Wrestler, loved the 20th Century Fox sound opening on all the speakers, and then laid back and watched the movie. And I'll talk about that as well. You know, I wouldn't recommend it, truthfully. It's fine acting, but why glorify a down-and-out wrestler? I mean, what's the big deal? I will talk about it. In my time, when I was younger and growing up and trying to role model who I should be, I go to the movies, I would see heroes, whether they be a war hero or a doctor or a businessman who made it on his own and, you know, gave the money away. I had real heroes to look up to. Every character in the movies today, without any exception that I can think of, is somebody not to be worshipped or looked up to or for a child to see. Why would you want a child to see some beat up wrestler on a comeback thing? What is ennobling about this story? Nothing. Nothing. Why can't Hollywood make a movie, for example, or why couldn't they have made a movie about a doctor? A doctor, for example, a surgeon. Let's take a surgeon and his comeback. Why must it be about some beat up wrestler? Tell me why. Why must it be about a wrestler who's cut to ribbons and this and that, and his daughter and he are estranged, and she's a lesbian, and he wants to love her, and she don't love him because he's a loser, and then she loves him, and she trusts him, and then he disappoints her again, and then there's the stripper with a heart of gold. I mean, I've seen it 1,000 times before, okay? And what I'm saying is you're going to invest an hour and a half of your life in some you know, down-and-out guy who makes it and comes back because he has a dream. Why can't it be about a surgeon who had been at the top of his field in the 80s, and he got sick or he got arrested for false charges, and he fights his way back out, and then he goes back and gets relicensed, and he goes back into practice. What a story that would be. Or tell me about the Russian emigres who had been doctors in the Soviet Union and came here and had to be orderlies in a hospital, even though they had been doctors in the Soviet Union. And they were orderlies here and then went back to medical school here and then became doctors here and have a successful life. Tell me about those people. Tell me that story instead of the story of a beat-up wrestler. Please, Hollywood. Why must you focus on the absolute worst role models for our children? I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I mean, you know, the inauguration. It's like a coronation. If it was a Republican planning to spend this amount of money, you'd hear nothing from the top to the bottom screaming about extravagance, decadence. But because it's a left-wing leader that's about to be inaugurated, it's a good inauguration. It's not a coronation. It's unbelievable how stupid the American people are. You know, just stupid. Ingrid, Virginia Beach, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, the one thing, I'm not a dream interpreter, but I have been listening to you for a while, sir. And you have an uncanny ability to read the present, which makes it almost prophetic.
I have an uncanny ability to read the what?
The present, sir. What you can read what is happening so deeply well that you can see the handwriting on the wall. That makes it almost prophetic.
So my subconscious sees into the future where America will be at its knees before Obama, or the people on the conservative right will be at their knees before Obama?
Well, what I am seeing, sir, is the struggle in your heart because you love this country deeply. You are having the weight of what you see coming on, and Obama, on the other hand, has the weight of this country for his own reasons. So in that regard, you're both wearing the same shoes.
Wow. Yeah, now hold on. You're very smart. The shoe part of it is very, you know, there's an old saying, you know, walk in the other man's shoes or don't criticize a man until you've walked in his shoes for a mile or something like that. He was wearing the same shoes that I have. They were scuffed. They were round in the front and open in the back, sort of like an eco shoe that I have bought for the last few months because I've been having trouble with my right foot, which goes to the fact that I couldn't stand up, that my legs weren't working, which means it's projected into the future when I'm a very old man. And it also frightened me in the sense when I reinterpreted the dream or interpreted the dream that it's some distant time in the future when people have been put into the gulag that will be created by the far left in this country. That's kind of a deep-seated fear.
But, sir, you yourself gave an answer. What the poem you wrote for your mom, which is somebody that is closest to your soul, was that what you said, that fear is your greatest friend?
No. I said that which we fear is our friend. That which we love is our enemy. Fear nothing, all is eternal. In other words, don't fear death. What else do you think it meant?
Right. Well,
in other words, don't fear death. What are you going to, how can you fear what is? How can you fear what is and what is and has always been? How can you fear that?
Well, let me just answer you this way, sir. Our greatest fear, our fear is your friend. Once you can face that fear, okay, you are on your way to control it. You're in a way to handle it.
Well, I understand that. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil. You know that? I'm sure you know that poem.
Yes, sir. But
now, why do you suppose the prophets wrote that particular prayer?
When you walk in because you have to have a hope in our higher power, in God. I'm going to use old-fashioned language, which I like to use.
Well, I'm not afraid of the word God. I haven't heard a word that replaced it yet.
But, you know, nowadays, politically correct, they say other things. I like to say God. And when you have that connection, you can walk through your fears because he's not that he's going to take away things. He accompanies you. God accompanies you and gives you the fortitude. So perhaps your fear can be your friend, because once you acknowledge that fear,
But what is mankind's greatest fear? Mankind's greatest fear is death, is it not, unless they're psychopaths?
Yes.
Psychopaths do not fear death. Or people who have come through terrible, terrible, terrible tragedies and have been through the other side and back often do not fear death. But the average person's deepest fear is death and dying. Is that not correct?
I will agree with you to a certain extent, sir. I think perhaps I've also seen that the greatest fear that I have observed and lived and seen is loneliness.
My God. That's interesting.
Even greater than death.
Isn't that interesting? But that's the fate of modern man, is loneliness.
Well, because we are losing our compass. We have
Ingrid, we are all alone. Make no mistake about it. You're not the only one who fears loneliness or lives in loneliness. We are all alone. We are born alone, and we live alone, and we die alone. Very few of us are fortunate enough to make a deeper connection either with another human being or with the Creator. Most of us live in a bubble of self, a bubble of self, and we never get out of this chrysalis. We never emerge as a fully developed spiritual being. I hate to sound like a New Age preacher, but let me tell you, I know that there's a lot of truth in what I just said, Ingrid. Most of us are not fully mature human beings. We march around in the chrysalis of ignorance, not even understanding the world we're living in. And so, therefore, let me take it to a political level. You see power-mad, greedy, insane people becoming politicians. They do not live for this, for the nation. They don't care a whit about the nation, most of them. They live in the chrysalis of self-interest and greed. All they can think about, like insects, is how much fecal matter they can pick up with their feelers. I'm sorry to be so graphic, but they're not much different than cockroaches, most of our so-called politicians. You know that, and I know that.
Yes, sir. Well,
but I don't even want to go down that road. All I can say is the dream was so profound that I felt I would share it with you. If we continue to talk about it, I suppose it will become too indulgent. And so, therefore, in the next hour, we will move on to other topics.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't know why I'm just thinking of this song for some reason, some old rock and roll, at least I play a little old rock and roll in the Savage Nation. I told you a dream in the last hour. You want to move on, you want to talk about it, whatever. There's plenty of news stories. I got them up on my site, that site, this site. Plenty of news. You've read it all, you've heard it all. You want me to sit here and talk about it? I'll talk about it. Any news story grip you today? Fine. What are you going to talk about? What are you going to talk about? The bums on Wall Street getting away with murder? You want to talk about Congress living in their own world with the lowest ratings in American history, laughing all the way to the bank? With a few lone senators like Jim DeMint saying Congress has cut the lines to the Constitution and their own laws. They're not even following their own laws, and they demand more money out of us. I mean, where's the money coming from? They're printing it. They're stealing it from us. Where does it end? Tell me it ends when the gangsters are in prison. You're going to arrest the prisoners? You're going to put the government in jail? Look at Blagojevich. The guy is allegedly caught by prosecutors bleep this, I want money for that, bleep that, bleep that. He's not in jail, not even indicted yet. Why? Why is that case stalled? Let's have political science 101 in the Savage Nation. Why is Madoff still living in his penthouse? Politics 101. Why? Because they're octopuses. They're octopi. They have tentacles that reach very far and wide. They're cagey people. That's how they got where they are. And they say, you touch me, something's going to fall over there. Maybe you yourself. And so suddenly the case gets slowed down. Suddenly gets slowed down. And before long, the average schmuck is too busy trying to survive. And then the average schmuck forgets it. Then the lawyer that gets $400,000 a month, what's that to a guy like Madoff? $400,000 a month, $500,000 a month. What was that? $5 million a year? That's spit. Spit for legal fees. Spit. Before long, the money gets spread around both sides of the aisle, and everyone forgets it, and boom. But you don't return a few library books and see what happens after 6 months. Or don't cut your shrubs in a certain condominium complex. Or put an American flag up in a condo complex and tell me if you don't wind up in prison. You wonder why there's discontent in America. Because we're no longer living in a republic. We're living in an autocracy. This is exactly what your textbooks taught you about in school. The difference between a democracy, a people's republic, a real one, not China, not Berkeley, not Austin, Texas, a real republic, as opposed to a tyranny. We are living in a tyranny of the few. They steal money from us and they laugh at us. They have a separate set of justice for them, for themselves. And we have no power over them whatsoever. Now, I want to go back to the dream for 1 minute because I thought of something I must tell you. Several years back, I had a dream about meeting George Bush, and I've never met him. But in this dream, I was on a pier, and the president at that time came on the pier, and we met. And he looked at me with derision, and we had a conversation. There wasn't much more to that dream, but it was extremely, you know, vivid. And not a year later, George Bush and I, in fact, did meet around water. We met around the Dubai ports deal. George Bush tried to sell the security of 9 of America's major ports to his friends in Dubai, if you remember correctly. I don't think you remember that. You stopped it. You stopped it through a mass uprising of emails. But that was then, this is now. You think you're going to stop the TARP money the same way? I wish you could. Congress today is far more insulated than was Congress of even 2 years ago when we stopped the Dubai ports deal. If I actually thought that, you know, hundreds of thousands or a couple of million emails and phone calls would stop the TARP money, I'd start a campaign. I believe this Congress is totally insulated from the people. They don't care. And so, therefore, I'm a little reluctant to bother you with such a request. But Senator Jim DeMint asked for you to do something today. Listen to clip 24.
Congress has cut the lines to our constitutional moorings. And we're just drifting around at this point and even ignoring the laws that we write, such as this troubled asset law, $750 billion, specifically said how it's to be used. We not only are ignoring the Constitution, we're ignoring our own laws. One of our goals here today is to enlist the help of the American people. We've seen so many times in the last couple of years when angry Americans call their congressmen and senators and tell them to stop and not to do that, not to do what's coming on this bill here. I think we do have a chance to stop it. There are a number of congressmen and senators who are on the fence. They've heard from their constituents during the holidays that they're tired of bailouts. They know we're in economic trouble, but they don't want to see the government print more money, borrow more money, and throw it around in ways we can't even anticipate. So it's our goal to stop this bill, and I think with the American people's help, we can do it.
Well, then send an email to your so-called representative and say no to TARP. Just say no to TARP, T-A-R-P. See what happens. Send it to your wonderful self-possessed leaders over there. See what happens. Try it with Barbara Boxer or Dianne Feinstein. See if they respond to you. Give it a shot. Send it to Hillary Clinton. You know how responsive they are to you. Yeah. The people are people, people, people. We just work. That's all we do. You see, my deepest fear is that the banking system itself will collapse, the currency itself will collapse, rather, and all of my hard-earned savings will evaporate in my own life. I have this nightmare that George Bush has started an avalanche that will end with a worthless dollar. That's my deepest fear, that everything I've worked for all my life, that may be in a bank or in a T-bill, because I don't invest in the stock market, will come to be worthless at the end of my life. Because these bums keep printing money, and every time these bums print money, they devalue the dollar. Don't you understand this? When they print $700 billion, they're making it up out of nowhere. It has no value. So your currency becomes valued at less. This is a nightmare. I don't believe a word that we need this to stimulate the economy, because we gave these bums money and it didn't stimulate jack. They're stealing it. Don't you get it? They're stealing it. They're hiding it all over the world. They're all Bernie Madoff. Bernie Madoff is a certifiable bad guy if what they say he did, he did. But he's emblematic of the government itself. The Treasury Secretary is a bigger Bernie Madoff, in my opinion. It doesn't stop with Bernie Madoff. He's an example. He's emblematic of what's going on. So what are you going to do about it? You're going to tell your congressman not to award TARP money? Let some banks go bankrupt. Let some damn investment banks go bankrupt that suddenly made themselves into banks overnight with their friend Paulson. He let them become banks so they can get TARP money. Criminal. Criminal behavior. I saw that creep on CNBC with that Maria something the other day. She asked him a straight-up question. He wouldn't answer it. He did the Mr. Peepers and answered some other question. She tried her best. The guy is a danger to the future of America. So they now, who do they pick to be the next Treasury Secretary? A tax dodger. They may as well go into Pelican Bay or San Quentin and see what they can find, some embezzler, and put him into the position of either SEC chairman or Treasury Secretary. Get some smart embezzler, a counterfeiter, and put him in there. He'd be about as qualified as this, the guy they just picked. Get a straight-out counterfeiter from Romania and put him into the Treasury Secretary's job, because he can just as soon counterfeit the money, and we wind up in the same place. You think I'm exaggerating? I'm not exaggerating. They're printing the money, and in so doing, they're destroying the value of the dollar. Whatever it has, it'll be worth less. Sure, say no to TARP. Sure, try sending an email. See what happens. Send one to Dianne Feinstein if you live in California, the esteemed Dianne Feinstein, or the great Yenta from Brooklyn, Barbara Boxer. See if Barbara Boxer answers you. Or try one of your senators or congressmen and just say no to TARP. Make it simple. Don't get complicated. Okay? The way I put the Dubai ports deal, remember that one? Remember how we stopped amnesty for illegal aliens? Remember? Remember what you wrote or your email to your so-called representative? You just said, no amnesty or we vote you out. It was something like that. Say no TARP or no vote for you, or no TARP or you're out. No TARP or we vote you out. Whatever you have to say. What, are they coming up for another election in 2 years? They care? You know, every time I turn on the TV now and I see another congressman or senator, with very, very rare exception, I get angry. I get angrier and angrier. I look at them and I despise them. I have contempt for them. I see them lying. They look like the cheapest of car salesmen. And I'm not putting down car salesmen. It's a metaphor, okay? So I had the cheapest of funeral directors. You want me to go there? Whatever you want to say. I've never seen anything like it. There's no sense of reality in any of them. The hair looks fake. They're all like made up. It's horrible. And it's no different with the newscasters. They look the same to me. Did you see Wallbanger's new set on Fox, shooting from behind with the gray locks? What is this? Wallbanger's new set on Fox, I have to say it for a minute because I'm a social observer, looks like an infomercial set where Wallbanger says, "So tell us about when you bought that soap product. Did your pimples clear up?" Yes, Mr. Wallbanger, the pimples cleared up. All right, we'll go right now to the other screen. Now, when you bought that soap, and then the audience answers it. I don't know who came up with the set on Fox News for Wallbanger. I can't believe this is going to work. I never saw anything like this. I mean, he shed the lib, or the lib shed him. Now he's gone to, the guy looks like he's running an infomercial. What is he selling? I don't know. Anyway, I'll be right back. Savage. Theresa Tomei has got some body. I mean, for an older woman, me. How does she stay in such shape? She plays the stripper with a heart of gold in The Wrestler. How does that woman stay? What is it, jeans? Years of fava beans in the ancestors? I don't know. Marisa Tomei, she was in Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. She was in underwear in every other scene. I was wondering who she was. She was very, she's a fabulous actress. I mean, her face, her facial changes are astonishing. She can really act. It's very rare that they can act. I mean, women with great bodies. Or no, actually, that's not true. The exact opposite is true. Let me take some calls. I'm going to move on to something else. Los Angeles, KGIL. Jason, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Michael, the weirdest thing, your previous caller, Ingrid, was talking about you being prophetic. And they're sort of prophetic, like having great insights into things. But the weirdest thing happens with you when you were really hung up on this dream tonight. And whenever you do that, like just sort of get snagged on something, a strange thing happens. Like when you came back from the other commercial, you said you played Little Anthony. And then you said, I don't know why I just played that. Well, Little Anthony was inducted into the Hall of Fame today.
What?
I swear to God. I swear to God. My Jewish word of honor. I swear to God.
Oh, my God. I swear on my word of honor. I didn't know that.
I swear, Michael, this has happened so many times. Like, you'll pick some obscure person out of nowhere whose name I haven't heard in 50 years, and all of a sudden, the next day in the news, they'll say that person died or that person, something happened.
No, I do have a very minor psychic quality to my mind, very minor. I know people, I've met people who have very profound psychic elements. I have very minor ones. I mean, if I start thinking of someone I haven't seen in a long time or heard from, inevitably within a few days I'll get either a message that something has happened to them, good or bad, or they'll call me, you know, or they'll contact me.
It's amazing. I mean, I've been trying to get through. Whenever that happens, I try calling you to tell you, you know, I can't get through always. But
now, Jason, you're listening to me in L.A. I have to ask again because we just started back on KGIL Live like last week or this week. How did you find me back on Los Angeles Live?
I just follow you. I go to your website all the time. And
Good. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity since you're such a loyal fan. I appreciate each and every fan of this show. Listener. Here's an article I got to get to. I've got to get to this article. And we can call about the dream or the wrestler or Madoff, whatever. You know, if you want to call on that, you can call a show. I saw an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that was astounding. Surgeon shortage pushes hospitals to hire temps. And they write about a woman, 42 years old, who is a surgeon now, general surgeon in her hometown of Franklin, Tennessee, Jennifer Peppers. And it says, faced with rising overhead costs and declines in reimbursements, she and her partner stopped drawing salaries last winter to pay her home mortgage. Dr. Peppers had to borrow from a credit line. So the surgeons shuttered their practice, and Dr. Peppers, 42 years old, hit the road. And so she travels around the country to various hospitals doing surgery. And I shook my head. I said, I cannot believe that in my lifetime, a profession as skilled and as revered as surgery has been reduced to the status of an itinerant. To an itinerant status. I couldn't believe what's gone on. But if you look into the surgeon shortage pushing hospitals to hire temps, you find something out. The reason these surgery practices are closing is severalfold. One of the primary reasons is illegal aliens, and they won't say it in the Wall Street Journal because the people who run the Wall Street Journal have always been in favor of open borders. That's why Obama had dinner with this faker, Paul Gigotta, whatever his name is, from the Wall Street Journal. He's not a conservative. I mean, well, where's the conservative in him? Tell me where the conservative is in him. They're fiscal conservatives, yet they believe in a Wall Street bailout? Oh, really? So where has their conservatism been? So that's why I name guys like that who went to the Obama dinner, rather, at Will's house, chameleon conservatives. You can mark that one down. So let's go back to the doctor. So he says, increasingly, these patients had no insurance. Hospitals typically have the means to pursue debts from patients or write the losses off as charity care, but doctors don't always have the manpower to collect on their portion of the bill. So if an illegal alien comes to a hospital, the surgeons have to perform surgery, and they wind up taking it in the shorts. Now the surgeon has become an itinerant in her own nation. The illegal alien is destroying our medical system. The illegal alien influx is destroying our schools and our medical system. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? And yet not one of the people who had dinner with Obama will say that. They're chameleons.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. Now, I want to go back for a minute to the surgeon story, that there's a surgeon shortage. And I want to, again, reiterate this: the multifactorial reasons for this. One, illegals who beat the bill. They're getting free surgery in our hospitals. Two, the greedy lawyer parasites who file false medical malpractice claims, primarily the class action vermin who should be imprisoned. I mean, I'm ashamed to admit that I know of a class action lawyer who's a big fake liberal. All his life he's made believe he's a nice guy. He's one of the worst people I ever met. A sneak from top to bottom and acts like he's nice and good and kind. His father was a criminal, an outright criminal. He upgraded from his father and got a law degree. And what does he do? He sues companies. He's never created a product. He's never performed a service. What he does is he seeks out companies and tries to suck off them like the cockroach that he is. And the horrible thing is that when you look at these people, they're human beings. And you don't want to hate any human being. You want to love your fellow man. You do. Particularly someone you know for many years. But you have to step back and say, what does this man actually do for society? He's a leech. He's a cockroach. So now you have cockroaches like him who do nothing. They sue companies that make a product. The person that they're suing for doesn't get much out of it. The lawyers make all the money. So now let's come back to the surgeon. You got surgeons now. People don't want to become surgeons. A lot of them went into Wall Street because they figured it's a faster shortcut to making money. So they're saying, well, maybe now the collapse of Wall Street will kindle an interest in medicine as a career. How many young people are being taught to put aside the desire for immediate gain for a long-term rewarding career in medicine? Are you kidding me? They want to be a web designer, a film director. they don't want to be a doctor. What's in it for them to be a doctor? So here's a case of this poor woman. I read on, I couldn't believe how much money they make, how little money they make. I had no idea what a doctor makes. I hadn't any idea that a surgeon, even in a smaller town, let's say, was making $135,000 a year in her own practice. I couldn't believe it. That's not a lot of money for a person who went to school for so many years. Medical school, residency, a fellowship. And then she comes out of medical school saddled with a big, big debt. And then Medicare cuts back on what it pays surgeons for common procedures. And I read this, I couldn't believe it. An appendectomy, Medicare reimburses $580 for an appendectomy. I couldn't believe what I'm reading here. I pay more to have my boat cleaned. Did you hear what I just said to you? How is it possible that a surgeon only gets $580 for an appendectomy according to a Medicare? Who figured this out? You get a guy working at $25 an hour, cleans my boat, he makes more money. For complex hemorrhoidal removal, a general surgeon got $390 in 08, compared with $574 in 1997. I don't believe what I'm looking at here. How can anyone go? Why would anyone go to school to make that kind of money? They open up your body, they risk their future and your life, and they make as much money as a guy who washes a boat? By 07, Dr. Pepper says she was making roughly $135,000 annually and her practice was struggling. So now she's itinerant. So now she's on the road. The illegal aliens aren't on the road, though. They're here, they're near, and they're everywhere. They waltz into a hospital. They want surgery, they get it, and they don't pay. Now, you say they're a social cause. You don't even understand they're a social cause for this free medical care, just as they're social cause for free education. Nothing is free, as we're finding out. 1-800-449-8255. Let's talk about these topics and others right here on the Savage Nation. Phoenix, Arizona. Tim, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hello, Savage. Yeah, I've been meaning to say, if I could coin your show, is authentic. There's a certain authenticity to what you say, and I've got to tell you, there's many times I laugh out loud. I totally crack up at what you're saying. I was just listening to you talking about a congressman. And I got to agree with you. Every time I watch a C-SPAN, you know, I see Harry Reid and his beady little eyes and You were saying Feinstein and Boxer. Just this is why Americans have zero confidence in the
That's Congress. Right. Congress has an approval rating below that of George Bush. And yet they have the audacity to get up there and give speeches as though someone believes them. I really don't know where they get the audacity, truthfully, to face the American people at all. I do know they call their pet people in the media, like Brett Baer on Brent Baer, the other one who just left Fox. They have certain pets that they go to when they want to, you know, give a little message of sincerity. For example, the Bushes gave a little farewell visit. Who did they choose?
Larry King.
Larry King, a real reliable sort. I couldn't believe this interview. Did anyone see this one, the Bushes on Larry King? Did you catch that? We have the sound about that. Yeah. Larry King, well, listen to clip 25. You got to hear this.
How has the economy hit you?
I'm in blind trust.
So you don't know how it's...
But I'm confident it has.
When do you find out? On the 21st?
21st of January.
When you're in a blank, that means you don't know what stocks you might own.
I have no earthly idea.
And who controls the trust?
Northern Trust.
Of Texas?
I don't know. Northern Trust is like a big national outfit. Probably came out of it. I met the trustees 8 years ago, and I haven't talked to them since.
Does that concern you? Well,
sure. But it's just a fact of life. When you run for political office, especially when you serve as president, then your holdings are in a blind trust. And that we knew that. And, you know, that's something you accept.
Yeah. Just folk like you and I. They did it for the good of the country. Oh, yeah. See what I mean? So they go to a pet like Larry King, a really reliable personality with a great background. A perfect background for politicians to go to, Larry King. So there was another one. Some guy from CNBC named Larry Kudlow had dinner with Obama last night, along with Peggy Noonan, Paul Gigot, Bill Kristol, Charles Krauthammer, and others who believe in open borders, the Tower of Babel with regard to language, and no culture. But they call themselves conservatives. I gave them a name today, and I call them chameleon conservatives. Listen to clip one.
This was an off-the-record dinner, and I'm going to keep it off the record in terms of deep content, but Peggy Noonan was there, Paul Gigot of the Wall Street Journal, Bill Kristol, myself, Charles Krauthammer, some others, about 9 or 10 of us. You know what? I don't think he's trying to win us over, but he's trying to connect with us. He's trying to engage with us, to his great credit. This was a very cordial dinner. I want to make that point.
No kidding. He wasn't trying to win you over. It was just, you just wanted to break bread with him. Is that it? This is amazing. It's just amazing to me how they think that we don't see through this. It's amazing to me. I don't know who Larry Kudlow is. I really don't know. But if he thinks we believe that Peggy Noonan and Paul Gigot and Bill Kristol and Charles Krauthammer and the Cats and Jammer kids who were not there trying to, you know, get something out of their relationship with Obama. You know, they have the wrong audience here. That's all I can tell you. They are chameleon conservatives. I have never seen Peggy Noonan, as brilliant a writer as she is, ever support the issues that are important to Americans who love their nation. Never. She's always been glib and a fabulous journalist, or let us say a polemicist. Let's put it to you that way. She's good at it. She's never talked about borders, the integrity of a nation's borders. She's never written, so far as I know, about English only, for particularly in the voting booth that I know of, and such. And Paul Gigot is an open borders guy from the Wall Street Journal. Bill Kristol is a rich man's son who doesn't look to me like, if he didn't have a father who got him started, he maybe he would have worked at a publishing company. I'm not knocking it. He would have been an editor fired by now, sitting in a cafe complaining. Krauthammer, unfortunately, was, cursed by life, but he takes it out on everybody around him. A mean, nasty man. Another brilliant, mean, nasty man. But none of them have I ever heard them mention borders, language, or culture. And to me, if they don't, where is their conservatism? Where? Where is it? So that's why Obama would reach out to them. They are exactly the problem. They're not the solution. They are the McCain wing of the Republican Party. They are McCain. They're various arms of John McCain. They're the doctrinaire, party guy, Republican guy, check pants Republican guy, get along, go along with the other side of the aisle. You know, big deal. We don't need the other side of the aisle. We're living in extreme times. We need an extremist party. That's what we need right now to save us. We need extremism in the defense of liberty. We don't need get along, go along kind of check pants dinner companions. You understand? Okay, now there are other stories that I haven't gotten to that I wanted to talk about, the Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which I'm saying affectionately will become Do Ask, Do Tell. Now, I mean, we could talk about that one, and I would say anyone who wants to give their life for their country, I don't care if they're gay or straight, God bless them. But that's not where this begins and ends. It's not about gays who are suddenly dying to die for their country. Are you crazy? This is a gigantic social engineering enterprise that will destroy the integrity of the military, because the first thing the military is going to do is take scarce resources and be forced to devote them in part, to diversity training to teach straight guys to be tolerant of gay guys in the shower. That's what I'm telling you. You want to hear the naked truth? I just gave it to you. So on the face of it, who cares if a person's gay? There's always been gays in the military. I'm sure some of our greatest heroes were gay. So what? They kept it to themselves, as it should be, and it was never an issue. But once it becomes an issue, it's no longer about being gay, is it? It's really about politics, and it's really about social engineering, isn't it? It's really about the left-wing takeover of the military, using the gay issue to take over the military, to start controlling it from within. Just as the global warming lie has now spread to such an extent like a cancer, even though we all know it's fake. Here we have the coldest winter that we can remember, blizzard conditions. And, of course, Al Gore is nowhere to be seen because he's a faker. He's never around when it's cold. He pops out on hot days and tells you there's global warming, which would be laughable if it wasn't tragic. The tragedy is there are now institutions in place from the top to the bottom that are committed to fighting global warming when, in fact, it has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with the sunspots, volcanic activity. Just trust real science as opposed to these doctrinaire fakers. And so, as I say to you, the folks who are into the global warming lie are into it not so much to save the planet as they are in it to socialize the United States of America. I can prove it by Obama's appointment in Carol Browner. She was a member of a socialist think tank, member of a global socialist umbrella group. She's been picked by Obama to be a climate czar. Wow. She's going to stop the sun? Somebody ought to write a folk song about she wanted to stop the sun. But it's not funny. So here you got climate czar who wants to impose socialism on America, and she's going to do it by legislating activities in order to protect the environment. In the military, they will, in order to protect homosexuals, they will impose a sort of socialism on the military. You understand the danger of this? It's not about gays. It's about using the gay issue to gain control of the military. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talking about chameleon conservatives in the media. Now, I read just now, President Bush just thanks Rush. Listen to this. President Bush thanks Rush. Listeners were told Rush Limbaugh had been called to Washington for a super secret meeting yesterday. It turns out he traveled to the White House for lunch with President Bush as part of the outgoing leader's way of saying thank you to some of his staunchest supporters. That is amazing to me. This guy has been a front man for the Bush administration, the Republican corruption, for so many years it's frightening. And I don't know how you don't know this. I give up. I just give up. Of course he's going to say thank you to the man who supported him through thick and through thin. Of course he's going to say thank you to him when no one else is saying thank you to him. Of course Rush Limbaugh has been a front for the Republican Party all of these years, which explains his popularity and his sudden rise to fame. Of course he's never been marginalized because he's part of the system, not part of the solution. Of course I understand all of that. Which is why affectionately I call Salieri the golfer. Rush Limbaugh been called for a super secret meeting, turned to travel to the White House for lunch with President Bush as part of the outgoing leader's way of saying thank you to some of his staunchest supporters. Well, I'll let you decide whether That's something to be, is that something you'd want? To get a thank you for supporting a man who did so much damage to this country? Oh, look, let's just move on already with this Bush thing. It's depressing. I can't wait till it's over. It's been a nightmare. I don't know if it's going to get worse. It's a nightmare that can get worse. That's the problem. It's, you know, it's like degrees of nightmaredom. It can get worse. Wrestling. You want to talk about the wrestler? Shooting in Oakland. The crazy cop who shot the guy in the back. Oh, my God. What a crazy man. The guy's on the ground, handcuffs, and he shoots him in the back. How does this happen? In front of a cell phone camera? Wow. Talk about hippies. Let's talk about hippies in San Francisco. That's always a good topic. Let's talk about hippies, a hippie commune. I miss that. I mean, I miss that whole cycle. I never went to a commune. The reason is I don't like to share it. You know, I don't like to share forks. I don't like to share saliva. I don't like to share mattresses. So that's good. In other words, my anal retentive nature, well, first of all, I'm a germaphobe, so that ruled out a hippie commune. They're still glorifying it in San Francisco, a hippie commune. They're talking about a mansion known in the 60s as the White House of Hippiedom. You hear what must have gone on in there? The filth and the dirt and the drugs? That they're glorifying here in this sick city. San Francisco. The locus of infection for the whole country. Physical and mental. All right, turn it off. I'm not ready. I don't even want to go home tonight. I want to stay in the radio station till midnight. I want to keep talking. What it is that, like in the movie The Wrestler, the last scene was pretty good. He's had heart attack, bypass surgery, retires from wrestling. He works as a short order deli man, which is actually one of the best scenes in the movie. And Mickey Rourke is the deli man. Is fabulous. This hulking monster serving coleslaw to mean customers in a New Jersey, in Rawway, New Jersey. Horrible, man. He did such a great job on that. You have to love that scene. Then he's living this horrible life. His daughter hates him. The girl he wants to be with, the stripper doesn't want to be with him. He's just totally, you know, there's nothing out there for him. So he decides he's going to go back to one last rematch in the movie. Now, this is with a guy with stitches in the front of his chest from a bypass from several months before. And you know it's going to kill him. But he says to the stripper who comes at the last minute to the stadium and tries to stop him, he says, "Don't worry, no matter what happens to me in that ring, it's nothing compared to what happens to me outside." That was like a revelation to me. You understand that? I mean, that's true. And although this job on the radio is a tough job in many ways, it is like a very tough job. In a way, it's comparable to the wrestler, my life. I got to tell you that in some ways. It's nothing compared to the heartbreak outside, and it's nothing compared to the stress of the outside world. As tough as radio can be, and it can be. I mean, you can get caught with callers who hit you because they're smart, and they can hit you hard and fast, and you got to come back on your feet, or you're not gonna be standing too long in this business. I mean, you can get away with it by hanging up on them. You can only do that so long. Then the listeners are gonna just, you know, they're gonna say, "What do I want to listen to this garbage for?" That has not happened to me in 15 years. You know what I'm saying? I'll stand here and I will argue with people while they're capable of still arguing. I told you I have a firm rule, which is hell is a place where there is no logic or reason. I will not argue with a person who has no reason. And so if they can't use logic, I don't want to argue with them. It's talking to a wall. And other than that, really, I will argue with a person. And it can be very demanding. And it's like the wrestler. I mean, the fact is it's somewhat similar in that regard. It's not as though I'm washed up. I mean, I'm at the top of my field, not the bottom of it. I'm not having a comeback. This is it. This is the zenith of my career. I mean, 4 bestsellers in a row. What would you call that, a loser? The 3rd largest radio show in America. You call that being on the bottom because I wasn't invited to lunch with Obama? I don't think so. You know? But what I'm saying to you is I can empathize with it, but so can everybody out there in the audience empathize with a guy who was big in the 80s and in schools. Of course you're going to empathize with a Rocky Balboa all over again. I mean, we've seen it, this and that. So it's a different version of it. Mickey Rourke does a great job. She's a knockout. Great lighting, great directing, great acting. But I wouldn't bring the kids to it, that's all. I'd rather see an uplifting movie about a surgeon who had the legs cut out from under himself or herself, and then 20 years later makes a comeback. Give us some role models that the kids can love. I don't think you're going to want your child to become a professional wrestler.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, here's what I've been talking about in the Savage Nation today. First, I talked about my dream, Savage's dream. Earlier in the show, I told you my dream about meeting Barack Obama. What's your interpretation of it? How do you think it ties in with the part about me reading the poem to my deceased mother? Have you ever had a dream about Obama? What's it been? The next topic was about conservative chameleons. A group of conservative media chameleons went to have dinner with Obama last night. Now, who, in your opinion, is the worst of the chameleons? Is it Crystal, Kudlow, Krauthammer, or Noonan? Will the check pants Republicans forge an alliance with Obama and again screw rank-and-file conservatives? Well, will they? Of course they will. That's who they are. They're Republican flacks. Topic three was Bernie Madoff. He avoids jail again. We can see from today's ruling on Bernie Madoff that it's not just Judge Ellis who may be enmeshed in the octopus's tentacles. What honest judge in their right mind would have failed to lock this guy away until trial? It is a culture of judicial liberalism in New York, or have these judges, do you think, been somehow ensnared by Madoff? Are these early victories for Madoff an indication that he'll escape jail entirely? Let's move on. To crush the terrorist organization of Hamas, Israel has made some of its deepest penetrations of Gaza territory yet and haven't shown signs of letting up. To give us some perspective, I'd like to welcome Aaron Klein of WorldNet Daily reporting from Tel Aviv. Aaron, what can you tell us?
Thanks, Michael. Well, Israel has continued its ground operation in the Gaza Strip today, with Israeli forces now battling Hamas terrorists in the vicinity of the northern Gaza Strip, which is the area where for the last few years, ever since Israel withdrew, retreated under fire from Gaza in 2005, Hamas has been firing a large volley of rockets from this very area into nearby Jewish communities. Now, it's important, Michael, to go over exactly where we are, where Israel is in this military campaign against Hamas, so that we can understand what is needed in order for Israel to win and whether they're going to actually get what they need to devastate Hamas in Gaza. Now, 19 days ago, after Hamas refused to continue a ceasefire with Israel, after Hamas fired a large number of rockets from Gaza into the nearby populated Jewish communities, the Israeli Defense Forces fought back and launched an air campaign against Hamas targets in Gaza. Now, what I'm being told today, very interestingly, is that a lot of these targets, they weren't so much the Hamas military infrastructure, meaning Hamas's rockets, meaning Hamas's so-called executive force of about 10,000 Hamas soldiers ready to take on Israel, but that the Israeli targets in the beginning of the war were largely Hamas's government infrastructure, its ability to rule in the Gaza Strip. So that was in the first week. Now, last week we saw some ground forces enter the Gaza Strip and surround the vicinity of central Gaza, surround the vicinity of northern Gaza. In other words, what Israel is doing right now, its second stage, the beginning of a ground operation, is surrounding crucial areas so that the third stage can begin, which would be a massive ground operation in Gaza that would clean out the terrorist strongholds, that would go essentially house to house, or at least compound to compound, where Israel knows Hamas is operating, and clean out the terrorist infrastructure. infrastructure. This is what the Israeli Defense Forces, Michael, says they need in order to devastate Hamas in Gaza and in order to stop the rockets from being launched from the Gaza Strip. Now, earlier today, here on the Savage Nation, I actually talked with Abu Abdullah, who is a senior commander of Hamas's, what they call their military wing. And listen to what he claimed to me, because it's very interesting. This is Abu Abdullah, exclusively right here on the Savage Nation. Was Abu Abdullah, a senior leader of Hamas's military wing, and what he just claimed to us here is that Hamas, he's claiming at least, is still intact, that Hamas's military wing, as he calls it, is still able to fight Israel, but he is admitting that Hamas's government infrastructure, that Hamas's ability to govern in Gaza has been targeted. Now, this is consistent with information I'm getting from Israeli defense officials battling in Gaza. What they're saying is that, yes, Israel has caused a blow to Hamas. Yes, Israel has closed about 30% of the tunnels from Egypt that smuggle weapons into Gaza. And yes, Israel has damaged Hamas's rocket infrastructure by about 30% in Gaza. But that a major ground operation is needed, is crucial in order to ultimately win this war. Well, guess what's going on right now? The United Nations, the international community, and some Israeli leaders seem to be pushing now for a ceasefire, for a truce that would end the conflict. Even Ehud Barak, the defense minister of Israel, today announced that he would be even willing to extend a one-week ceasefire, a one-week truce to Hamas in Gaza, which very clearly would give them the ability to rearm and regroup and get some quiet to train for their further campaign against Israel. But the larger picture here, one being painted by the U.S., one being painted by the United Nations and by Israeli leaders, seems to be that they are inching closer to a ceasefire that would get this, put international troops in Gaza. And we all know, Michael, how well international forces have in the past protected Israel, like the international troops that were put in the Gaza Strip to begin with in 2005 that then fled their duty after Hamas took over Gaza, or maybe the international troops that were put in Lebanon after Israel essentially failed to win the war against Hezbollah in Lebanon in 2006. Those international troops have done nothing as Hezbollah has armed itself in full view of the international community. So bottom line, we're waiting to see whether Israel will continue the ground operation and possibly win this war, or whether they will hand the war to Hamas with a ceasefire. Over and out from Tel Aviv, back to you, Michael.
Thank you, Aaron. Hearing directly from our enemies can be well enlightening.
Savage.
I've told you for years about the government media complex. I've also told you for years about men and women in the government and the media who pretend to be conservative for political and monetary advantage and turn out in the end to be just liberals. Only yesterday I talked about the leprechaun and his support of Obama, and today we find out that a pack of these conservative chameleons who change their colors with each administration went out to dinner with Barack Obama. Now, there's nothing wrong with having dinner with Barack Obama, is there? But listen, George Will, the bow-tie-wearing Mr. Peepers who writes a so-called conservative column and then appears on liberal TV news programs as sort of the pet conservative, opened up his Chevy Chase Maryland home to Obama and a gaggle of other chameleons. Aside from George Willis, there was Bill Kristol, the stuttering, weak-voiced editor of the weekly, or shall I say meekly, Standard. This guy's made a career of duping conservative rubes to make a buck and gain entrance to all the Georgetown dinner parties. Also attending was David Brooks, columnist for the famously conservative New York Times. And then there was that Dr. Strangelove of the media, real creepy, Charles Krauthammer, of the Washington Post. Now, there's a man who has been embittered by life and has nothing but bitter, nasty comments to say about true conservatives. Not one word from Krauthammer that I can recall about borders, language, or culture. Well, we'll see what kind of conservative commentaries they have to offer after basking in the presence of the left's new messiah. But just because these conservative comedians came to dinner with Barack Obama doesn't mean that they're the only ones who have betrayed conservative values. There's a long list of others who act as fifth columnists within the conservative movement. At first glance, they appear to be the real thing. But when it comes to the bedrock issues of the right, borders, language, and culture, never mind fiscal conservatism, they are nowhere to be found. They're eating away conservatism from within. Real liberals can always be identified for who they are. More dangerous are those who fly false colors. But let's put that aside. Obama's recent picks for his cabinet positions show how unprepared for this job our president-elect really is. Richardson and now Geithner, it has to make one wonder what's going on in his head. With a report on why the Geithner pick doesn't work is Representative Steve King from Iowa, who has some thoughts on this.
Well, thanks, Michael, and yes, I have, and I appreciate the opportunity to say a few words about it on your program. And I've tracked this thing through the presidential appointments, the cabinet-level appointments that come back before Bill Clinton, but I remember clearly the parameters that were set then by the people that were doing the confirmations. And Kimba Woods' name came up as Attorney General, and she had some problems in her background, having, I believe, hired domestic help that couldn't lawfully work in the United States, and it was unlawfully president of the United States, if I remember correctly. Well, that disqualified Kimball Wood because the rule of law has to be paramount, especially for our top elected and appointed officials. And then so the name came along, Zoe Baird, as Attorney General again, and it seemed as though Bill Clinton was determined he was going to be gender-specific in his appointments to Attorney General. She had the same problems, as I recall, that Kimball Wood did, so Zoe Baird was bounced off the list, and then we ended up with his third appointment, which was consistent with his three choices in being gender-specific on Attorney General. It was going to be a female under Bill Clinton, but it set a standard. And so those then who hire illegals, unlawfully have employees, are disqualified from serving at that level, at least as Attorney General. And then, under the Bush administration, when he began to make his appointments and selected Linda Chavez as Secretary of Labor, in my recollection again, Linda Chavez had hired a domestic employee or had at least one that was a resident in her house who was unlawfully present in the United States or unlawfully working, whichever the case was. And these are all allegations, by the way. I don't think anything's been adjudicated on it. And so Linda Chavez was disqualified because she didn't adhere to the rule of law with sufficient respect for the, we could call them technicalities. Democrats are saying that it's a common mistake, and so we should discount it. But in any case, there's three names that I'll give you. Kimball Wood, Zoe Baird, Linda Chavez, all were disqualified because of their indiscretions with illegals who were in their employment or at least within their residence. And I think this is important. If Timothy Geithner has had a domestic employee working for him who was unlawfully present in the United States, who was unlawfully working in the United States, the documents should show that. He doesn't get to say, well, her green card expired while she was still under my employment. He had to have had the information in his files because we're required to file an I-9 document by the IRS and the INS. I've done that many times and lived in fear that they would knock on my office door, or actually they just opened the door, and come in and gone through my files. I made sure all of my I-9 files were in order and that we hired only lawful people, and that if there was an audit by then the INS and now the DHS, that I'd be in compliance. So that I-9 document must be somewhere. If not, Timothy Geithner has violated another law, and I think we need to look into that and get that answer. But in any case, I don't give him a pass on this. He would be the standard bearer for the compliance with the law. And as the Secretary of the Treasury, he would also then be in charge of the Internal Revenue Service. Now, I'd like to get rid of the IRS, Michael, and you know that, and we've had this conversation. But as long as we're going to have them, we need somebody that's running the place that actually adheres to the law. Now, they're asking for some kind of clemency for his failure to pay back taxes because he was determined to be both an employee and a private contractor. But in any case, anyone who's going to be the overall boss of the IRS should know that you don't get by without paying payroll taxes, especially on yourself. And I've been an employer and been self-employed at least 28 years. I filed many of these documents myself and hired a number of accountants to do that for me. You don't get to play ignorant. You don't get to decide, well, I didn't know or I didn't think about it or I subordinated that decision to someone else. I hired an expert to do that and they made a mistake. The only person I can think of that would step up and defend that kind of behavior would be Charlie Rangel, who has some of the same problems. And I want someone who is above reproach. This is an economic crisis that we are in. The Obama administration is lurching to the left. They have walked away from the free enterprise system, and they're seeking to set up a state-run economy. And if we're going to have a Secretary of the Treasury that can have contempt for the rule of law, or at least disregard for the rule of law, that can ignore the information that's in his file, presumably on an I-9 document, and continue to employ someone who is unlawful to at least work for him, someone who can ignore paying his own payroll taxes, and then when called into account by audit, pay those that are only to the limit of the statute of limitations, and then come up with the other piece when it turns out that the vetting committee has exposed that as a vulnerability. And if Democrats and Republicans will then step up and say, well, these are common mistakes, I'm wondering how many of those defenders also are in the same bed singing from the same hymnal as Timothy Geithner and Charlie Rangel. So that's my view. I don't think he gets to violate immigration law and still be the Secretary of Treasury. I think those parameters were established by Kimball Wood, Zoe Baird, and Linda Chavez. I think Timothy Geithner deserves the same scrutiny and the same verdict. And when we come to the income taxes that he has avoided, and again, hid behind at least the statute of limitations, you can tell that it's not a decision of character. It was an economic decision. And as long as he could get by without paying the taxes, he didn't pay them. I can only imagine how many Americans would make the argument to the IRS. Well, I didn't know. I was ignorant. I had a bad tax man. You didn't catch me, so I'm not going to pay you until you come audit me and catch me avoiding taxes. The list of excuses will go on. It'll make it very difficult to collect taxes through the IRS if Timothy Geithner is the Secretary of the Treasury. And furthermore, it's going to make it very difficult to get prosecutions, convictions. And I have constituents that are serving jail time for tax avoidance under violations. They're going to be asking for pardons from the future President Obama. So that, in a nutshell, Michael, is what I think of all of this. I appreciate the opportunity to vent myself, and I kick it back over to you and thank you again for the chance.
Thanks for your thoughts on this, Congressman King. I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
As I predicted over and over again, and as it was announced today, Barack Obama will end the don't ask, don't tell policy of the U.S. military. On the surface, this would seem to mean that gays would now be allowed to serve openly in the U.S. military. But that is not the deeper purpose of this action. First of all, it's Obama's payback to the homosexual billionaires, mainly in Hollywood, who were the first to support him. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. If gays and lesbians want to serve in the military and protect the country, let them. I told you before, I'm a sexual libertarian. But there's something else at work here. The goal of ending the don't ask, don't tell policy is to change the straight members of the U.S. military, not the gay ones. Because in the wake of this decision, straight members of the military will be forced into sensitivity training sessions so they can better understand and sympathize with their homosexual fellow soldiers. That's the real purpose of do ask, do tell. Just as has happened with police departments across the United States of America, just as it has happened with the San Francisco Police Department. A story which Michael Savage brought you first. Soldiers will be enlisted not in the fight to defend America or preserve her against her enemies. They will be signed up to fight insensitivity. The military itself will be dismantled as you know it, not by shutting it down from the outside, but by eroding it from the inside. This is an attempt to metrosexualize the military. But here's what's even more disturbing. I predicted that Obama would do this months ago. But I also predicted that he would raise taxes, appoint far leftists to the Supreme Court, make homosexual marriage legal across America, strip under God from the Pledge of Allegiance, set up programs for illegals, and ban the death penalty. If my predictions have begun to come true before Obama is even president, what worse things are on the way once he becomes president? Do ask, do tell. You've heard me talk about how our open borders are killing our nation. The flood of illegal immigrants and drugs coming into our country is crippling our prison system, our healthcare system, our educational systems. For years now, too many officials have looked the other way. Now drug cartels have made many border towns look like war zones, with gunfights, kidnapping, and murder becoming an almost daily occurrence. That's right. Joining us today is Gary Fleming, a filmmaker who takes a look at the drug cartel problem that can no longer be ignored in his latest documentary, Drug Wars, Silver or Lead. Rusty Fleming, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I appreciate you having me today.
What made you decide to make this movie?
Well, first of all, it started off as being a story about crystal methamphetamines here in Texas. And very quickly into my investigation, I found myself down in Laredo, Texas, in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, where tons of meth were coming across the border into not just Texas, but in all regions of the country. And I found myself embedded between two cartels that were warring over the control of the Laredo corridor. And I realized pretty quick that the story wasn't about the amount of drugs coming into the country. It was more about these guys that are willing to fight to the death and put their families at risk and everything to have control over this corridor. And so I did some interviews. I was tossed into the deep into the pool from the beginning. I ended up actually interviewing a couple of guys within one of the cartels, and I came back to Dallas with a whole new mission, and that was to get inside this one particular cartel, the Gulf Cartel, and get to the bottom of what they do and how they're doing it. That was truly the basis of the movie. And during the course of the next 2.5 years, I interviewed dozens of people that had had family members kidnapped. Some were drug-related, some were not. People whose lives had been literally turned upside down just from being at close proximity to these drug gangs. And it became evident to me that these were not drug dealers as usual. I heard a lot of people, mainly on the federal enforcement side, that were telling me, you know, this is just, you know, the drug cartels doing what they do. You let these guys fight it out, one will be left standing, and everything will go back to being peaceful again. And my own evidence that I was uncovering revealed something quite different to me. This is not drug dealing as usual. These guys are not your average cartel. The cartels that used to exist no longer exist. Those men that used to run those organizations are no longer running them. And these guys have crossed the line into what's called narco-terrorism. And they operate just like any other terrorist organization on the planet, except they're motivated not by a political motivation, but by a monetary motivation. They kidnap, they kill, they torture, they are beheading their victims in mass numbers now. All of that violence and corruption has spilled into the United States. A statement released by the DEA just recently was that the Mexican drug trafficking organizations now represent the most dominant and pervasive threat to the national security of the United States. And they have the ability to operate much more freely than Al-Qaeda does in our country.
This didn't happen overnight. Is our government taking this seriously enough?
They are at least now acknowledging that there is an issue. And that was very clear just in the last 2 weeks. You've had General Barry McCafferty, who is in my film, has come out and said that the deterioration of the Mexican government and the whole Mexican democracy is happening at such a rate that it is becoming critical, even to the national security structure of the United States. You had Michael Chertoff come out last week and announced that if there was a surge of violence into the United States, that the federal government has developed and is still developing a plan to deal with that violence. When you look at those statements alone, you have to understand that the federal government is finally recognizing that this is a pervasive threat and that they are gearing up for it. What they're not acknowledging is how far into the security structure, the government, society, that these organizations have already infiltrated within our own country. A lot of people think this is just a border issue, and it is not. The main body of the war is being fought along our border, but it has long since come into the interior of the United States. Last year, you had a string of kidnappings in Atlanta that were all cartel-related. Slayings done in Alabama that were cartel-related. You had a kidnapping late last year of a young boy in Las Vegas that was cartel-related. These things are telltale signs of what is to come. And I think that you're right. It has been going on a long time. And there's a sentiment that these are just, this has been the same old issue that it's always been. And it, you know, we'll deal with it. And it's not.
Well, this problem is bigger than most people realize. Why aren't we hearing about this from the mainstream media?
You know, that's a good question. I can only tell you that in mainstream media, it's a business-driven entity. And a lot of the business interests that advertise on those media venues are also the same business interests that have billions of dollars at stake in Mexico. And it is not very popular to talk about the issues going on in Mexico for these Fortune 500 companies. I think that that has a lot to do with the influence on mainstream media. Unfortunately, there are some groups out there that have made this a racial issue, like we're picking on the Mexican people, and they have diverted that focus from what it really should be to what it isn't. By doing that, they're deflecting what the real problem is.
Well, what do you think needs to be done?
I think the first thing that we need to do is educate Americans on what is really going on at the border. You know, I live here in Dallas, Texas. I was 400 miles away from the border, and at the height of the drug war in Nuevo Laredo, just 400 miles from here, I did not fully comprehend the scope of the violence and the capabilities of these cartels within the United States. Number two, we have to understand that this is a complex problem, and there's not going to be any one solution. I'll give you an example. I think a lot of people, when it comes to border security, kind of have lulled themselves into some false sense of security that this fence is going to fix all the security ills along our border. And I assure you it's not. And one of the reasons it's not is because 90% of the narcotics coming into this country don't come through those security gaps out in the desert. They're coming through our legitimate ports of entry, through the truckloads of commerce as dictated by the NAFTA agreement. So, yes, I think the fence has a very specific purpose in specific areas along the border, but it is not the one catch-all solution. I think first and foremost, if you were to go right down a list and say, this is what we got to do, we do have to get security at our border. That's a combination of a fence, boots on the ground, and better security at our ports of entry. Our ports of entry right now are completely understaffed. They are under-resourced. They can barely handle the traffic that they get today. For instance, in Laredo, there's 8,000 to 10,000 trucks a day crossing the bridge. We inspect about 60 of them. 60 out of 10,000. That's not even 1%. We have to get better at protecting Americans at the ports of entry. We have the technology. We have the resources to do it. It's just a matter of amassing the political will to do it. You can't do any of this outside of securing that border. So that would be number one. Number two, we need to allocate more funding for programs for demand reduction of narcotics in this country and addiction treatment. We're never going to completely eradicate the demand any more than anybody else is going to eradicate the supply. But we could do so much better at all of it. And I think we need to look at the overall drug policy in this country and do a better job at educating our children, getting to them when they're younger, because we're seeing a younger generation becoming involved, not just with drugs, but with the drug smugglers. And we have to focus on that and educate them. The next thing is we need to get more federal resources as it relates to fighting these cartels and securing our border to the local agencies down along the border that have to do the job. I've traveled with the Texas Border Sheriff's Coalition for the last 2 years constantly. I have been with one or more of these sheriffs, and I see what they have to go up against. The federal government is almost non-existent in their help. Those are just a few steps that I think we have to look at in order to effectively attack this problem. You know, when you see something in the paper that says a drug-related killing or a gang-related killing, we've all become so desensitized to that. You know, they're not putting a face to this crime. Can you imagine going against the Gambino crime family and never mentioning John Gotti's name? We have got to start putting faces to these crimes. When it's a drug-related killing, what organizations does that person, is he connected to? Why is there such a reluctance to do that when it comes to these Mexican groups? I think that's a fair question to ask.
Gary Fleming, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. Savage. I talked about my dream. It came to me that someone came and said, did you see on the Drudge Report that you were invited to meet Obama? I said, no, when did it appear? They said 10 minutes ago. And it was a long list of names, mainly people in talk radio, and Savage was there. So it was a lengthy discussion as to whether I would go. Should I go? Do I want to go? And I was going to ask my audience, should I go and see Obama? Then it became a logistic question of, can I get there during the inauguration? And that was mixed in with it. Isn't it going to be too crowded to get there? Etc. and so on. And I was saying, well, maybe they can arrange a helicopter from Virginia to fly me in because there's no way to drive in during the inauguration. The next scene in the dream, I guess that was resolved somehow, is that it's inside of a somewhat almost a community center or a school room, a school auditorium on a flat floor, not with an amphitheater style seating. And Obama's up at the dais, but he's not there yet. It's just filled with cameras and lights. And I'm in the back trying to listen to the introductory speeches and him speaking shortly, and I can't hear him well. The sound system is bad. So I go around the side, and in order to get over to the left side of the front, I have to crawl in front of the cameras, as you see done all the time at congressional hearings. So I crawl along the front of the room, and I wind up in the corner, the left corner, actually would be the right corner of the stage, listening to the speeches. And then Obama comes over to me, and I look up, and I'm on my hands and knees from having crawled over, and my head is at the level of his shoe. And I notice his shoes are the same as my shoes. And he reaches down, and he says to me, hello, Michael Savage. And I say to him, hello, Mr. President. I hope you know that I was once a social worker. And he says, well, why don't you get up and shake my hand? And I said, I can't. My legs don't work. Whereupon he reaches down, and I feel his strength, and he lifts me up. And that was the end of the dream. Now, what's interesting about this dream is there's so many things interesting about the dream that I'm going to let you, the audience, be the interpreter of my subconscious. This is Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. But wait, there's more. There was one more scene, and perhaps the most telling for those dream analysts amongst you. Just after this scene of Obama reaching down to pick up yours truly, my deceased mother appeared in my dream. As true as I am standing here, she felt as though she were alive and standing next to me. She came to me in a dream, in other words. And I looked at her and I said, Mom, I've written a poem. Would you like to hear it? Now, she was not one given to literature. She said, yes. And I said, well, here it is. I hope you like it. That which we fear the most is our best friend. That which we love the most is our worst enemy. Fear nothing. All is eternal. My mother thought for a moment and smiled, and she said, I really like that poem, Michael. But we've talked enough about this. I think my dog has an itching attack from watching Will Blitzer, because he wants to see the man arrested for sedition and deported. Every time he sees one of these talk show guys on CNN, my dog starts to scratch. Every time he sees Neil Cavuto on Fox, the dog starts to, like, almost rip his ears out. He can't take it anymore. Teddy understands reality. I have to turn the news off in front of a two-year-old dog. That's what I think is going on. He sees the leprechaun, the dog starts to howl. Had to take the poor dog to the vet today. Oh, God, poor Teddy. You see, sickness comes to everyone, even a two-year-old dog. He was scratching now for a month, no matter what we tried. Turns out he has a staph infection on his skin. How does a dog get a staph infection? So I asked the vet, is it transferable to humans? And the answer was, well, they say no, because it's a different Staphylococcus species. I sure hope she's right, I'll tell you the truth. Because the minute I heard it, I started scratching in the nose, the inside of my ear itched, in the nostril. You ever get an itch in the nostril? The minute I heard staph infection of his skin, and I had to give him a steroid shot and put him on antibiotics, the nostril itch, the eyelid, the ear. I can make half of America start to itch right now. A lot of it is suggestive, I'll be honest with you. Well, here's what's on michaelsavage.com. The big news today is manifest and manifold. Obama will end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Who told you this would be his first move or one of his first moves? It was I, Michael Savage, who predicted it. Another big story is disgraced money manager Bernie Madoff has won the latest round in his battle with prosecutors over his bail package. Another judge ruled that Madoff can remain out and free of bail in his $7 million penthouse. Isn't America great, where the streets are paved with yolds? Bin Laden sent another tape, oh yeah, urging war in Israel. What's new about that? And he says that Arab governments are now allies of the Jewish state. I guess everyone's an ally of the Jewish state except him and his cave dwellers. Firefighters. Firefighters in western Arizona charged with using arson to get work. My goodness. I guess that's like accusing prostitutes of causing horniness to get work, but we'll let that go by. Investment manager, the investment manager who staged the plane crash to evade the law, remember him? He muttered die as he was found by federal agents bleeding from a slashed wrist. Another article, interesting one, is why are oligarchs, royal families, special interests giving to Clinton? Asks Christopher Hitchens, linked up on michaelsavage.com. Well, why are oligarchs, royal families, and special interests giving to Clinton? The answer is because they're going to get something for it. The real question is, how in the world can we have Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State when they're two gangsters from the South? Hamas raids aid trucks and sells the supplies. Welcome back, Cotter. Let us see what else we have on the Savage. Bernanke, that's the Barbasol shave man, Federal Reserve Chairman Vern Bernanke, said that we need more bailouts. Why not? The first number were very good. And the new Treasury pick, of course, is a tax dodger. Obama's choice to run the Treasury Department and lead the rescue effort. It disclosed to senators he failed to pay $34,000 in taxes from 01 to 04 and was actually fined a penalty for that by the IRS. Perfect man for the job. Given that we have charlatans and gangsters running every element of the government, he should just join the club. With God's will and your listenership, Savage. I shall return.